Welcome to the Science Update Podcast. I'm Bob Hirshon, and this is the podcast for May 14th, 2010.
The Science Update Podcast is produced by AAAS, advancing science, serving society.
I find it amazing that we were able to take an extinct species and learn something entirely new.
In this first draft sequence, our main goal is not so much to study the Neanderthals themselves, but really to study modern humans, study ourselves.
We kind of thought to ourselves, you know, what things do we encounter in everyday life that are manually powered that essentially spin things really quickly? So that spinner came to mind.
We discovered something that was never even dreamed of.
This week, scientists have resurrected an extinct mammal's hemoglobin with the help of a lowly bacterium. And a team of inventive undergraduates designs a low-tech centrifuge for detecting blood disorders in the developing world. Also, we'll report on DNA that's been jumping from one species to another. But first, the big story of the week is that scientists have now sequenced the genome of our extinct Neanderthal relatives. Suzanne Bard is going to tell you about that.
Scientists have sequenced the genetic code of three Neanderthals that lived in Croatia nearly 40,000 years ago. Svante Paabo is director of the Max Planck Institute of Evolutionary Anthropology in Germany and a lead researcher on the project. His team compared the Neanderthal genetic code to that of living humans from different parts of the globe.
In this first draft sequence, our main goal is not so much to study the Neanderthals themselves, but really to study modern humans, study ourselves.
The analysis shows that a small percentage of the nuclear DNA of modern humans from Europe and Asia is the same as that of Neanderthals, but that Africans don't share these similarities. This suggests that after modern humans left Africa, they probably interbred more extensively with Neanderthals than was previously thought.
We find that this applies to all people outside Africa, no matter where they live, even in China and in Papua New Guinea. So it suggests another scenario, actually. The most plausible one is then that it happens early in a population that goes out of Africa and becomes ancestral to everyone outside Africa, not just people in Europe and Western Asia where Neanderthals occurred.
Paabo says the Neanderthal genome sequence is still a rough draft, and scientists will be trying to tease out how the many genetic differences between the extinct species and modern humans set them apart in terms of metabolism, cognitive function, and other characteristics.
Thanks, Suzanne. Next, Justin Warner has a very different story concerning DNA.
In the sci-fi movie The Fly, a scientist crosses his DNA with a housefly's and ends up turning into a giant insect. Although the results aren't nearly as sensationalistic, it turns out that creatures as different as insects and humans may have been swapping DNA for ages. This according to researchers at the University of Texas at Arlington, who have been taking advantage of the recent gene sequencing boom. 2 years ago, they found that nearly identical copies of self-replicating DNA segments called transposons were sprinkled throughout the animal kingdom. Biologist Cedric Fichot says the same transposons turned up in insects, amphibians, and even mammals.
Just the extreme level of sequence similarity in the absence of any sort of selection that we can detect is strongly suggestive of transfer.
It was already known that bacteria could exchange DNA laterally, even between individuals of different species, but this work established that it's happened among multicellular species as well. The question was, how? Now Fichot's team has found a clue. They found several of the same transposons in two species with a known relationship, a South American parasitic insect and its pond snail host. That suggests that parasitism somehow facilitates gene transfer.
Now, we don't know the direction of the transfer. We don't know if it went from the parasite to the host or the host to the parasite. That's not possible for us to tell. But we know for sure that there's been some exchange of these transposons between host and parasites.
The mechanism may be hard to tease out because, unlike in the movies, the transfer of genes from one species to another happens on an evolutionary time scale. But since transposons are now known to make up nearly half the human genome, it's possible that a good chunk of our DNA was somehow imported from other creatures, including bugs.
Thanks, Justin. Arctic animals have evolved a number of strategies to deal with extremely cold temperatures, but uncovering these adaptations is difficult if the animals in question happen to be extinct.
That didn't deter University of Manitoba comparative physiologist Kevin Campbell from trying to discover a cold weather secret of the woolly mammoth. With the aid of bacteria called E. coli and the DNA of living elephants, he and his colleagues recently recreated red blood cell proteins identical to those which once coursed through the extinct mammal's circulatory system.
So what we had to do is we had to somehow bring the mammoth hemoglobin, in essence, back to life.
Campbell's team discovered that the woolly mammoth's unique hemoglobin structure helped it conserve heat while still getting oxygen to its extremities.
The changes we discovered in the mammoth hemoglobin aren't found in any living animals. And so we might have predicted that their hemoglobin might have evolved to require less energy. We could never have dreamed that they would take a completely different path to solve the same problem.
He says the finding is especially surprising, considering that hemoglobin is already one of the best understood proteins in the world.
I find it amazing that we were able to take an extinct species and learn something entirely new that we never knew about hemoglobin, because hemoglobin is perhaps one of the, you know, top three, maybe, intensively studied proteins in the world. You know, and we discovered something that was never even dreamed of with this molecule. And to use an extinct species for that is really quite interesting to me.
Campbell says researchers looking to improve upon artificial blood substitutes for humans might want to look to extinct species for inspiration.
You know, a donor-free society. But currently, there's a number of roadblocks for these types of hemoglobins. They don't quite work appropriately at this point of time. And with this type of approach and looking at these extinct species that have solved novel problems to the environmental conditions that they were in, we can learn more about hemoglobin, reverse engineer, take what we've learned, and apply it potentially to perfectly engineered human hemoglobin with specific properties.
Campbell says they'd like to study the hemoglobin of other extinct Arctic animals with living tropical cousins, such as the mastodon and Steller's sea cow. Finally today, Suzanne has another story about blood.
If someone suffers from anemia in the developing world, it could be a sign of malnutrition, HIV infection, or another disease. The condition can be detected by separating red blood cells from plasma using a centrifuge. But many rural healthcare workers don't have access to one, or to electricity with which to run it. Now, Rice University undergraduates Lila Kerr and Lauren Tice have come up with a low-tech solution. Kerr says they looked in the kitchen.
We kind of thought to ourselves, you know, what things do we encounter in everyday life that are manually powered that essentially spin things really quickly? So valve spinner came to mind.
With a few modifications to hold test tubes in place, the team transformed the kitchen implement into a functional centrifuge. They plan on testing the device in Africa and South America this summer.
Thanks, Suzanne. Well, that's all we have for you this week. Next week, we'll tell you why near wins keep problem gamblers coming back for more, and why helping others might be good for your body. In the meantime, you can get your daily dose of science by listening to the Science Update Podcast Daily Edition every day, Monday through Friday. You can find it on our website, scienceupdate.com, or at iTunes. You can also check out Science Update's fan page on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. And remember, if you have a science question, give us a call at 1-800-WHY-IS-IT. If we use your question, we'll send you a Science Update mug. Thanks for listening. I'm Bob Hirshon for AAAS, the Science Society.